Welcome to Off the Chart. It's episode 7 of Extra's 8-part podcast devoted to the groundbreaking Showtime series The L Word and the LA lesbians we can't stop thinking about. With the Generation Q reboot about to launch, we're looking back season by season at how the show revolutionized queer women's representation, getting it wrong as often as it got it right. Yes, we have relived The L Word, so you don't have to.
You're very welcome.
On this episode, we're processing season 6 and all its baby news, bonker plot lines, and possible murder. I'm Eternity Martis, senior editor at Extra, and I want to know, who killed this bitch Jenny?
I'm Erica Lenti, senior editor at Extra, and Eternity, I killed Jenny Schechter.
I knew it.
I'm Michelle Turingen, managing producer of video at Extra, and I want Lucy Lawless to interrogate me.
I'm Rachel Giza, the editorial director of Extra, and I confess I also have the negatives of Les Girls in my attic.
So how would you all sum up the 6th and final season, or as the New York Times put it, the show's, quote, lunacy-revealing plot points?
It was a mess, I mean, to put it simply. It was the shortest of the seasons. There was only 8 episodes, but it felt incredibly unfocused and bloated. It was only set over 3 months. It opens with a scene 3 months after season 5 ends. Jenny has drowned in Bette and Tina's pool, and then it cuts back immediately to the moments after the Les Girls rap party. And then we follow that plot line, that story, and we get back to the night of Jenny's death in the final episode. It is so weird. There's no internal logic or consistency. And to me, it feels like it all ends up ramping up to probably what is one of the weirdest and least satisfying what the fuck TV series finales ever. And it also felt like really poor fan service, like a bit of a screw you to the fans of the show.
You didn't like the wind machine?
I did not like the wind machine at the end. It was just weird.
For me, there were just a lot of characters choosing their own personal selfish desires over the needs of others, which just reveals that most of these characters suck. We see it with Jenny, obviously, no surprise there, when she pushes Shane around through the start of the season without really considering what Shane wants or needs in their relationship. Jenny also doesn't give a shit when she steals Alice's screenplay idea. She's a jerk. Alice grapples with this idea when she recants her stance on outing people, and she really learns what that can do to their lives, which was nice. And then most heartbreakingly, Max gets left in the middle of the night by Tom when Tom can't deal with Max's pregnancy. I was totally shattered. Like, these characters are so selfish and self-absorbed. They suck.
I'm going to take a flip side to that idea, because I think there were actually many tests of loyalty in the final season. Jenny is constantly testing Shane on her ability to make their relationship work. Helena tests Dylan on her true feelings and her intentions. Alice and Tasha's relationship is tested when a new character, Jamie, enters their lives. And of course, collectively, the entire LA crew remain loyal to each other when they are being interrogated by the police about Jenny's death.
Well, I would sum up this entire season as turfy, super turfy. It's really, really hard to watch Max's plotline throughout the season and his so-called friends constantly misgender him, push his pregnancy on him, from Tina and Bette telling him that he'll feel differently once the baby comes, to Jenny gifting him with a breast pump and then calling him selfish when he says he doesn't want to use a breast pump. And so none of this has aged well rewatching it. But at the same time, I feel like we're still having these conversations about trans and non-binary bodies and even the fetus's right over the parents. I would say it's nothing has really changed much.
It's true.
All right. So our final Les recap. Shell, you want to talk about Jenny?
I guess. I still have love
poor
in my heart
Shell.
For Jenny, but she is a hot mess in this final season, and everyone is mad at her.
Jenny Schechter is a liar and a user.
I hate Jenny Schechter.
Schechter is so fucking dead.
You are dead meat, Schechter. Dead.
Jenny revenge fucks Nikki Stevens, who was the lead of Lay Girls, and then promptly dumps her the next morning. She confesses her love to Shane, and then they oddly start a relationship together, which seems like a really poor idea to hook up with your best friend and roommate. She lies to Molly Kroll, who is Phyllis Kroll's daughter. Fun fact, she is actually her daughter in real life as well. She lies to Molly about Shane cheating with Nikki. She messes with Helena and Dylan's relationship. She messes with Tina and Bette's relationship. She's completely awful to Max. She just sucks.
I can see that my friends don't want to be around me anymore. That they want me to shut the fuck up and go away.
And of course, as everyone knows, the season ends with Jenny dead in a pool.
Bye.
Bye, girl.
So, what are your reactions to Jenny's death?
Who wants to start?
Like I said, well, who killed this bitch, Jenny? Would love to know, but I think that it was actually Alice. I've always thought it was Alice, and rewatching it again, I started to think maybe Jenny killed herself, but then there was this moment between Tasha and Alice towards the end where it sounds almost like Alice has, like, confessed to killing Jenny. Did anyone else catch that?
Yeah, I did a bunch of research following the series finale, and there's a whole cohort of people on the internet who think that Alice says, "I killed her," when she hugs Tasha. I think she's saying, "Okay, we need a lip reader," or something. I don't buy into the theory.
This was our idea for, like, a serial-like podcast to investigate the death of Jenny Schechter. That's our next podcast.
Do you remember where you were the night that Jenny Schechter died? I think that Jenny killed herself. I think that there was a lot of discussion about self-harm and suicide. I think she even says to Shane that she would kill herself without her. We're just, like, beat over the head with the railing thing. So I think, like, she probably just killed herself in the pool. And the video that she puts together for Bette and Tina does feel like a really long extended suicide note of sorts. So that's where I stand.
Right. And after she's found dead in the pool, we get to see that clip of Jenny being like, "I won't forget you guys." And mm-hmm. she's crying. And the railing thing that you're talking about is that the woman who was called a yikes, a dyke who doesn't know that she is a dyke is a yikes. She doesn't fix the railing. And there's a scene where Bette almost kind of has Jenny cornered up at the top of their room where the railing is. Mm-hmm. So there's a lot of different clues here.
Why didn't Wheezy finish the railing? We're told like 8 times.
Maybe Wheezy did it. It was Wheezy the yike.
Wheezy had a handsome young fellow to go see, if you recall.
Well, fun fact, back when this show first aired, there was supposed to be a spinoff with Alice in jail, I guess. So the theory back then when the show first came out was that Alice did do it, and then she was supposed to have this spinoff show with her, I don't know, in jail paying for it. But clearly that never played out. So there's all these theories that Jenny killed herself or whoever did. But that's a little fun fact.
Eileen Chaykin cornered the market on the Orange is the New Black lesbian prison style show.
Very prescient. I mean, again, like what I said it before, this to me just felt like such poor fan service for a show that meant so much to so many people who were watching it. I think it was a real failed experiment in trying to play with form. So when you have these the interrogation scenes where the detective is played by Lucy Lawless, who is Xena Warrior Princess. So that era is very much a dyke icon of that era. But it was all shot in this really bad arty student film kind of way. And so I think that there was a desire to kind of play with some format or tone or genre and have this last season be somewhat of a murder mystery, which seems like a weird thing to do in a final season of a show that was really beloved and groundbreaking. You know, I think that, like, when Sopranos ended the way it did, just kind of going to black, and it's like, what happened? The finale of Lost was also controversial.
Yeah. Not over. I'm not over it.
Wow.
You've tapped into something here.
But I think really that did. I think likewise, this was one of those, like, there's not a person alive who found this a satisfying ending. And so it just felt super disappointing. And then, like we mentioned, you know, the closing credits are all the actors kind of, first of all, walking seriously towards the police station, but then it becomes Glam Squad. So then it becomes like a wind machine is going and they're doing like a Tyra, like they're walking mm-hmm. like they're on America's Next Top Model. And it just feels tonally so off. Like, you just murdered a character or else had that character commit suicide and now we're glamorous. It was just so weird to me. It was such a disaster.
With bongo versions of Betty.
Yes.
And yes. Jenny is there. Jenny is with the glam squad, which I'm like, what? Like, I'm so confused. It made absolutely no sense. And that Betty version, like, can we just stop it with the Betty song? Like,
stop making Betty happen, trying to make Betty happen.
And like, Rachel, when you said like they tried to experiment with form, I think today we have shows that actually execute that form properly. Like How to Get Away with Murder is an excellent example of how we took a murder mystery, work backwards from there. Like, that is great. Scandal is great. And it felt like almost the ending of this was like when you see a theater show, you know, and everyone comes back out on stage, even though they've died right. in the show, the stage play, and everyone's like taking a final bow. That's almost what it felt like.
Yeah. Yeah, it was like being at one of those like murder mystery dinners, like with like, you know, really bad acting. Yeah, it was so peculiar to me how this ended.
All right, so next is Shane. So after hooking up with Nikki, Shane tries to make amends with Jenny.
I realize that I've done a lot of fucked up shit in my life. I acknowledge that, but this is by far the most fucked up thing I have ever done.
Is this the worst? Because I think that Shane did Carmen pretty dirty.
Agreed. Yeah.
Well, that eventually leads to her having a very creepy relationship with Jenny where they're suddenly in love. But then Shane quickly realizes that Jenny is awful and that Jenny has alienated all of their mutual friends, especially Alice and Bette. Shane is forced to choose between Jenny and the squad. She ends up choosing Jenny, but then realizes that Jenny has sabotaged her relationship with Molly and stole the lay girl's negatives. So how do we feel about Shane and Jenny being together?
I don't get it. Like, it just doesn't make sense. And I thought that the creepiest part of it was that scene when Shane is talking to Alice about why she's with Jenny. And Shane says, like, I've been entrusted to care for this person. And it kind of sounds like she's, like, describing the way she was with her brother, Shay. And I was like, that's weird. Maybe don't describe your romantic partner like that. I didn't get it. No chemistry. They're terrible together.
Yeah, I found the one kind of saving grace of this relationship was that when Shane does, like, when a relationship does not work for Shane, she runs away. But there's that scene where they're at the club together and Shane actually says to Jenny,
I gotta say, if I had to choose today between this relationship and our friendship, I'd have to choose the friendship.
And it's like the one time where it's like she seems to like, trying not to be cheating. And she seems to like be really honest with her feelings, but then still ends up in this really disastrous relationship. I thought it was kind of nice that she did that.
I can believe that Jenny would fall in love with Shane. That seems all pretty much in line with their characters. But then once they get into their relationship and you see how like Jenny is just being her usual Jenny self. And it's interesting that Shane like calls her out on it, too. It's almost like her bestie side comes out and is just like, are you putting on like the crazy Jenny show? Or are you trying to test me? So that part feels like that feels real to me. But the way in which Shane is sticking around seems really like not a reason to stay. So I bought it at first and didn't quite land in the end.
I mean, this is what I mean by like all of the internal logic of the show is gone, because even though Shane has slept with everyone, Shane has not slept with any of her friends, right? Mm-hmm. So in the core friendship group, you know, Bette has slept with Alice and, you know, Alice sleeps with Dana. And so within the friendship group, people have slept with one another in the group, but Shane has not slept with a single person in that friendship circle. And so it is so inconsistent that Shane would sleep with a friend in that way. That is something like of all the codes, like Shane doesn't have many codes around who she fucks, but that is one of them. This is the last thing that Shane would do, because I think that Shane has always been really protective of her friendship group. She's been really protective of her chosen family, and so wouldn't cross that line because those are the people she can't lose. And so it makes no sense. It just makes no sense.
I also think it's interesting that like of all the people that would know that Jenny would go bonkers, it would be Shane who has been there in the closest way. And it's funny that she tells Alice, oh yeah, like if it turns into more, I'll be okay with it. And I think it'll be different. I'm like, are you sure about that?
Have you met Jenny? Like, come on,
you would know. So why are you doing this?
All right, so let's move on to Bette and Tina. To Bette, as I get to call them for the last time. Rachel, you want to take this one?
Sure. We kind of come full circle with Bette and Tina. They seem happier and more balanced and stronger in their relationship than they've ever been. They have this kind of domestic bliss happening. They decide that they want to adopt another child and start renovations on their house. Tina pushes back against the studio rebranding Les Girls, The Girls, and then selling it as a hetero love story. Meanwhile, for Bette at work, she is struggling with Jody's, righteous anger. I mean, Jody's a lot, but I also sort of don't blame Jody in a way, because Bette wants Jody to leave, but instead Phyllis tells Bette that she needs to resign, but then also confesses she has a crush on her. Again, this show. Bette ends up partnering with her old college roommate, who's played by Elizabeth Berkley of Showgirls fame, and also Jessie from Saved by the Bell. They start up a gallery together. The Elizabeth Berkley character has a crush on Bette and hits on her. And Bette, for the first time, does not take the bait and does not cheat. So, growth. but Jenny threatens to tell Tina that Bette has cheated. Now, it's interesting because Jennifer Beals really had problems with this final season and thought it took a very, very bad turn, and also felt that it wasn't serving the story and serving the plot lines. And in a story that was reported by Autostraddle, that she frequently butted heads with Eileen Chaikin in this final season. And I think you can really feel like the tension and the frustration in Jennifer Beals acting in this final season. And also a bit of, like, let's just get this season over with.
I am happy to be getting out of this little incestuous hotbed of lesbian inter-fucking connectedness.
Yeah, I love the idea of thinking of Jennifer Beals, like, going to her trailer after shooting a scene and just sitting down and screaming, why? as Autostraddle reported. That's very much, I think, the experience of the viewer.
Also, she looked tired. Like, girl looked exhausted. And every character, there's, like, a close-up of Jennifer Beals' face, and there's, like, a little vein popping under her eye. I think it's in the last episode, so I can imagine she was just waiting to just dash off that set. All right, so let's move on to Alice and Tasha. Erica?
Yeah, this season is a little slow for Alice and Tasha. They're just trying to navigate their relationship. At the start of the season, they break up. They get back together. Poppy comes back,
yay,
which is great.
Poppy.
Then they go to therapy, and they're told they shouldn't be together, but then they end up together anyway. And then around the same time, Alice ends up on The Look, that talk show, and she recants her stance on outing. As I mentioned earlier, after she got a letter from a viewer whose brother was killed in, like, a gay panic style attack. And after that, Tasha and Alice end up meeting the very cute Jamie from the LA Gay and Lesbian Center, and they end up with what they call a third wheel crush on her. And it all comes to a head when Jamie admits she's fallen in love with Tasha. Alice says to Tasha, like, you choose, you decide what you want to do. And then in the end, love kind of sort of prevails when Tasha comes back to the house post Jenny death.
Alice.
What are you doing here?
Come here, are you okay?
No.
I'm here, come here. I'm here, I'm not going anywhere.
All right, so on to poor, sad, sad, tragic, lonely, so sad Max. Now, Max finds out that he's pregnant with Tom's baby while at consult for top surgery. And worse, he's too far along to get an abortion. So in the second worst scene of the series, minus Dana's death, Max wakes up one day and realizes that Tom has packed up all his stuff and left him. It's actually the scene for me that most sticks out as, like, the most traumatic. Like, I know Dana's death and the sunflower was, like, super sad, but that scene for some reason really got me. So anyways, Max is completely miserable and pregnant the rest of the season and has to deal with a ton of transphobia in some really hard-to-watch scenes, especially from Jenny, who constantly misgenders him in a really, really hurtful way, as does Alex and the rest of the women. And at this very awkward Willy Wonka-themed baby shower, Max is so overwhelmed by his crew of terrible people and begs Tina and Bette to adopt his baby. So now that we've watched it and, you know, we have a better sense of how this stuff has not really aged well in 2019, what was it like to rewatch all of these scenes with Max and these terrible, terrible women?
I mean, again, I've said this, I feel like I say this like a broken record. Max actually had tapped into a trans men support group at one point. He actually had acquaintances and friends around who could have been there for him. So there's something that feels just incredibly punishing and a weird creative choice to constantly set up Max as a tragic figure when, again, in the history of the show, we know that Max knows how to get access to peer support. We know that there would have been people who could have helped Max through his pregnancy and what that meant for his gender identity during his experience of pregnancy. So it just feels just like an act of cruelty on a character and an act of cruelty to a degree on, you know, trans viewers who saw Max go through this. I mean, I don't think the show needed to whitewash or pretend transphobia doesn't exist, but I think there's something irresponsible to present it without any kind of indication that there is support and that Max actually has a community that he could have tapped into. That's, I think, again, what just was so hard.
I guess if Tom were here, maybe it'd be easier.
Oh, fuck Tom.
I'd be more ready for all this.
Yeah, you know what, Max? I'm sorry, but what an asshole.
Yeah, he's such an asshole.
He's not an asshole. He just...
Have you spoken to him?
Scared. No. He changed both his numbers.
What an asshole. Seriously.
Yeah, the season ends without any resolution for Max, which I think is the saddest part. His baby's not born. He has no support. His friends are all assholes. We don't really see...
His boyfriend left him.
Yeah, like there's just nothing for Max at the end. Like we get to see all the other characters like Alice and Tasha come back together. Bette and Tina are going to move to New York. Like there's resolutions for all of them and Max just doesn't have anything. And it's really heartbreaking. I think we know that there are going to be some trans characters in the reboot. So let's hope that they give them much better treatment.
I don't think that's a hope. I feel like you can never get away with any of this stuff in 2019. Like, they have to. They have a responsibility to.
Yeah. And I also found it very funny that, you know, I know that Bette and Tina, they were trying to adopt a second baby. But, like, there was really no good reason why they couldn't adopt Max's baby. They're just like, no. Like, and that was it. And I found that, like, you could also help a friend here. And I think some point later in the season, Max is talking to some friends and says, like, they weren't cruel. They were just insular. Which is a great way to describe them. And I also thought the symbolism of Max shaving his beard after the party, after being so worn down by those other women and like shaving off the beard, which is a big thing if you know, like your presence, your facial features is a huge thing if you're transitioning, you're a trans man. And I felt like it was just like he was just totally worn down, like back into this person that he didn't want to be. And Rachel, do you want to take Helena?
Oh, yeah. I mean, Helena's relationship with Dylan was so boring. I don't know. Who cares about that relationship? The stakes were so low. It was just an incredibly boring plot line that I think existed just to give Alexandra Hedison, the actor who played Dylan, a role. She's sort of this, you know, out lesbian in Hollywood. She dated Ellen for a period of time. But to me, this was the Helena Dylan. Also, they had a lot of sex this season. There were so many Helena and Dylan sex scenes, including one where like Dylan holds a knife to Helena's throat.
Oh,
it was
God, yeah.
You remember that? So I feel like it was the most boring relationship that got way too much airtime in the series. And what about Kit?
My girl Kit has come out on the other end, sort of, kind of. Doesn't have much, but has a man. So Kit falls for a straight drag queen called Sunset Boulevard.
Who's lovely. He seems like such a lovely
yeah.
person.
Yeah, he's a great guy. She's got some banging hairdos this season, like a very Cleopatra type look. I'm all for it. So I will say this is finally justice for Kit. I'll take it.
Yeah, she has the club, too, and she's got the planet. I mean, the only good thing about Helena is that she provides money. Like, that's the only thing she's good for.
Yeah, Kit's been through a lot. Yeah. Like, she needs like a nice bumping club, some good hairdos, and a nice partner.
And she looked like during the dance competition, she looked phenomenal in every single outfit.
She did. Also, she that great. Dance scene, that whole dance thing, I totally loved it though. Like, that was the most alive Tasha has ever looked in the entire season.
I feel like it's like your musical theater kid coming out for
it
that
is.
Whole.
It is. So Kit got justice, but there's still a whole lot of unsolved questions. Do we want to talk about some of these questions that we still have in mind? Like, what did that final runway scene even mean?
Why was Nikki in the bushes? Like, why was Nikki Stevens hiding in the bushes at Bette and Tina's house? And also, whatever happened to Carmen? I would have loved. We see her in the video, but I want to know where Carmen's at.
Why didn't Wheezy finish that damn railing?
What happened to Max's baby? Is everything okay?
Yeah, and does Alice admit to killing Jenny? And if not, who killed Jenny? And does anyone even care? If anyone has any of their own theories or answers to these questions, please feel free to let us know at Extra Magazine. All right, so there's so much more wacky stuff we could talk about, but like Dylan with a kitchen knife, it's time for our final quickie round. This time we're talking hottest, cringiest, and funniest moments of season 6. So for me, the hottest moment was every single scene with Elizabeth Berkley, especially when Jennifer Beals was in it. They had so much chemistry.
Bette was in love with me.
Mm-mm. So were you two...
No.
Never.
No, I missed my big opportunity. But now she's taken by the lovely Tina Knoll. You never know.
I felt like a child that should not have been watching something I shouldn't have been. I was like, oh my God, this is great. Like, I like this way too much.
I agree. I mean, there are those scenes where at the art gallery opening where all the characters are like, they make such a great couple. And I was like, they really do. They are so beautiful together. So totally agree.
I don't think I can get over the showgirls pool scene.
Okay,
I'm sorry. To see Elizabeth Berkley as a sex object.
Justice
for Jesse.
Yes, I can't buy her as anyone but Jesse Spano, who gets addicted to the caffeine pills, and she's just so excited. She just can't hide it. So I just always see Jesse Spano.
I had two great callbacks that I enjoyed. Tasha goes to stay with Poppy because she and Alice are fighting, and Alice follows her to Poppy's apartment, and Poppy is hooking up with Gabby DeVoe, which I thought was like a nice callback. And then the other is there's this revisit from that season one Shane walk of shame in that infamous leather ensemble. And Shane stops by Tina and Bette's in the early morning. They're sitting on the front porch drinking coffee. Shane figures out that they've just spent the night having sex together, which was a callback to that scene. Only this time Shane is wearing a much better outfit. So I feel like maybe the Aline Che can hurt us and put Shane in a better outfit.
I think we should rename the Walk of Shame to the Walk of Shame.
I like it.
When your Walk of Shame is in a leather outfit.
Yes, or something that's like equally as embarrassing. Yeah. And how about the cringiest?
We've talked a lot about the transphobia and gross stuff that happens to Max. The one thing that really stood out to me was in episode 4.
How is the beautiful mother-to-be?
It was just so uncomfortable to watch. And I think to your point, Shell, there's no way that the reboot could ever do anything like this. So I don't know what the writers were thinking there, but it made me super uncomfortable.
So the cringiest moment for me in season 6 is Alice and Tasha end up at Poppy's place in the middle of a fight. And Alice is kind of playing with Poppy's decor and making fun of it.
Beautiful.
You got a problem with it?
You have to admit it's a little tacky.
It's her culture. It's not tacky.
Oh, come on. Look at the hat.
And kind of speaks to, like, Alice's overall like oblivion and her set of awfulness. So I was not into that.
Well, and again, too, like in the case of Poppy, the show also leaned in to Poppy being a particular kind of character with a Mexican-American heritage.
Right.
And then to have it be the object of ridicule.
Right.
And even though Tasha corrects Alice, it doesn't
land.
Yeah. Right. So again, it sort of feels like you've created this character in this particular kind of way to set her up as an object of ridicule.
Yes.
For me, the cringiest, I will say it again, is that end credit scene where they're all walking. I will never get over it. It will always be burned into my mind. All of the women getting like driven to the police station and then walking out of the cars like it's a runway. So they're all walking and the wind is blowing, but they're all smiling even though like someone committed murder possibly. They also looked incredibly awkward doing it. There's a scene where Jennifer Beals looks at the camera, but then it's like, oh God, I looked too long, and then looks down and keeps walking. So it must have also been very cringy for them. And what about the funniest moments?
I really love the scene when Alice realizes, like she connects the dots and realizes that Shane and Jenny are sleeping together. Because I think she really embodied all of the viewers in that moment. And she sends like a mass text to all of her friends. And like Helena falls off a treadmill and Kit doesn't know how to read a text message. Which I was like, oh, this is so sweet.
It was just burst into laughter in the middle of a meeting. Like,
it's great. It's excellent.
I would actually just like to know, we brought this up earlier, but about Wheezy.
She doesn't know she's a dyke.
That's because she's a yikes.
Yikes!
A dyke who doesn't know she's a dyke is a yikes. Is this like a real term?
I have never heard that term
Nor
before.
Nor have I.
Yikes. Okay, one of the funniest moments for me was towards the end of the season when all of a sudden Shane got super emo, like had the long black hair and the eyeliner and then like the suit look, like the dark clothes and the white tie and looked a whole lot like Mikey Way. and it was the time of emo, like it was just kind of on the tail end of emo. So I thought that was pretty funny.
We should bring Shane back for the My Chemical Romance reunion.
I think that she should replace Mikey Way as bassist. So that's it for this episode and our recapping of the original L Word series. Next time, we'll be sharing some preliminary thoughts on the first three episodes of Generation Q. That's right, Jennifer Beals hooked me up. But don't worry, we won't be giving away any spoilers. Will there be more accurate representation of trans people and people of color? Will Shane still be self-destructive? Will she have better hair? Will we ever find out who killed Jenny? Or will the new LA hotties have us saying, Jenny who? Or okay, boomer. I'm Eternity Martis.
I'm Michelle Turingin.
I'm Rachel Giza.
And I'm Erica Lenti.
Off the Chart is produced by Corey Mosqueda and Rachel Matlow. Our theme is by Kid Coolit. If you like what you're hearing, please review us on iTunes or wherever you get your podcasts. And feel free to get in touch with us on Twitter at Extra Magazine. Mia Kirshner, if you're listening, you're in Toronto, just walk into the Extra office and give us a thesis. Until next time.
I am happy to be getting out of this little incestuous hotbed of lesbian interfucking connectedness.